key numbers, the key variables, things to focus on in order to position yourself to become a millionaire. What do you need to be focused on? That's what I wanted to talk about today. The reality is that if you intend to have the financial ability, have the ability to walk away from full-time employment at some point down the road in the future, you will need to have accumulated at least $1 million. Why is that? Well, I don't know how much Social Security is going to be. I certainly know what your current lifestyle is. Well, I don't, but I certainly assume that your current lifestyle is going to demand income greater than what your Social Security benefit is going to be. Therefore, amassing $1 million plus is going to be essential, regardless of how you intend to utilize that $1 million to create income. You can take it, buy an annuity that'll spit off income forever. You can just draw down the balance and take out 4% or 3% every year. However you do it, it doesn't matter to me. I'm agnostic. What's important, what's essential, is that you get to the point where you actually have that amount of money saved. And that's a lot. It's a lot of money. And if you're looking at that or thinking about that, and you don't have any money saved at all, I think that that can actually be demotivating. You can just get to the point where you say, oh my gosh, forget it. You throw your hands up like there's no way I'm ever going to get there. I'm 35 years old. I'm 40 years old. How am I going to save $1 million? How am I going to invest and accumulate $1 million? And I think that if you start focusing on what I am going to talk about today, it will get you on the right path. That's what this is all about. I mean, the thing about money is that it has time value, and that's important for a variety of reasons, but one of the most is just simply that the longer it takes you to start pursuing your most important financial goals, the harder it becomes to get there. Obviously, if you started saving when you were 5, you'd have to save a lot less to get to $1 million at the age of 65. If you started at 45, you're going to have to save a lot more on a monthly basis to get to that $1 million at 65. So just get started. Need to start moving in that direction. So those are the things that I want to talk about today, are what you can do, what you can start doing right now, in order to get on that path to becoming a millionaire. So number one, we have an overemphasis on rate of return versus your savings rate. So your ROR, your rate of return, is the amount of money that you're earning, the interest that you're earning on whatever your money is. So if you go to the bank, you buy a CD, and that CD is going to pay you 5% over the course of a year. That's what your rate of return is going to be. If you're in the stock market and you're invested in the S&P 500 index, and that index returns 11% over the course of a year, well, that is your rate of return. Savings rate is simply how much of your income are you actually saving? How much are you able to take and put aside? And unfortunately, this was true for me for the majority of my 20s. I was in and out of debt, in and out of credit card debt, living paycheck to paycheck at times and making lots of money at other times, but it just wasn't consistent. It wasn't sustainable. And so foundationally, fundamentally, importantly, I didn't have a very high savings rate because I wasn't able to consistently save money. Living paycheck to paycheck means you're just spending all the money that is coming in, and all too often we're going into debt. So we're moving actually in the wrong direction, further away from that $1 million as opposed to closer to it. So if you're not in a position where you're able to save money at all, well, some things need to change there. If you're in a position where you could be, but you're just making decisions to allocate your money in other places, well, that's fine. But I advocate that you reassess that. You figure, okay, how much do I need to be actually saving? And this is, for the most part, within our control. Obviously, I empathize if you have medical bills or something has happened and you're out of work or whatever the case may be, it's difficult for you to be proactively saving money for things or investing money. But you need to get to the point, obviously, in order to save and invest your way to $1 million in some kind of an account, we have to be putting money into it. My grandpa used to say, tell you if you're going to be financially successful or not, can you save money? It's way more fun for most people to spend money than it is to save money. That being said, I think that once you're in the habit of saving money, you actually grow to really enjoy it. You grow to really like it. And you may even find that you enjoy investing. It's like anything else. It's like our work. So, well, I'm just not really very passionate about what I do. Well, how are you thinking about your work? How focused are you at really getting better at it, at mastering whatever it is that you're doing? Because there's a lot of good thinkers out there that say the first step to finding passion in what you do or finding passion at work is just to get really, really, really good at it. Because what happens is when we get really good at things, then we become more passionate about it. So if you're not into saving money, you're not into investing, that could simply be because you're not doing it very, you're just not doing a lot of it. You're not good at it yet. So focus on getting good at it. Focus on improving the skills that it takes to be able to save money every month. You'll get good at it, you'll become more interested in it, and maybe you'll even become passionate about it. So how much do I need to be saving? Well, nobody ever got to retirement age and was irritated or pissed off that they saved all of this money, which is a trite thing to say, but it's true. There's a great book called The Millionaire Next Door that tracked or studied who are the people that can become first-generation millionaires, meaning they didn't inherit wealth. They didn't have a big inheritance, and that helped them to, you know, become millionaires. These are people that through their own work, through their own savings and investing and commitment, were able to amass over $1 million. And one of the big takeaways, one of the big drivers, was that these people were in the habit of saving 20% of their income. So there you go. So what do you think when you hear that? Do you think, no way, it's good for them? 0% chance I could save 20% of my income? That may be true, but I am guessing that it's not true. It's just something that we are in the habit of doing, spending the majority or more than 80% of our income. Because if you're spending 100% of it, obviously there's no money left over for you. If you're spending 90% of the money that you earn, there's very little that's left over. So how do you get to the point where you're saving 20% and living on spending 80%? And that's the game here. If you can get to that point, if you can get to the point where you're saving 20%, saving and investing 20% of your income, I don't know if you can help but become financially successful. I don't know if you can help but to become a millionaire. So is it really that simple? Well, that sounds really easy and it does really hard. I absolutely get it. So I may seem like a dummy, but I'm not actually one. So I understand how difficult this stuff is. But like anything else, you are perfectly capable of doing difficult and doing hard things. So there you go. Number one is focus on savings rate. Work up to saving 20% of what you earn. Even if it's 1%, then 5, then 6, then 7, 10, 15, 20. You get the idea. The next thing is I want you to be focused on your discretionary spending. Okay. Discretionary spending. There's a couple of things here. 2 and 3 are essentially the same thing. Well, same areas, your discretionary spending and then your fixed expenses. So it's something called a reverse budget. And what a reverse budget does, it's also known as a pay yourself first budget. It just says, regardless of whether or not the thing that is most important to you is a fixed or a discretionary thing, you're putting it at the top. We must be able to prioritize and to recognize and to identify this is the most important thing in the different areas or arenas of our lives. So, what's the most important thing for your family? You need to figure out what that is and then to treat it as though it's the most important thing. What's the most important thing for your health? Well, we need to know what that is and then we need to do that. What's the most important thing for your money? What's the most important thing for your financial situation? We have to identify what that is. So that could be getting out of credit card debt. It could be contributing, saving money for my retirement, making contributions to my 401k. It could be buying a home. It could be my child's education. Whatever those top priorities are, whatever the most important thing, This is at the top of your reverse budget. So your savings goals, your financial goals, and your priorities go to the top, and you allocate money to realize those objectives. So you figure out, well, my retirement is my biggest priority. I'm now 40 years old, and I'm, holy cow, I haven't saved any money at all. Saving for my retirement is number one for me. Okay, great. So let's assume you've got 25 years to be saving money for your retirement, saving and investing for your retirement. You're 40, you intend to retire at 65. Whether you actually do that or not, you want to be in a position to be able to step away from full-time employment, full-time work at age 65. So you say, okay, if I'm starting at zero, fine. To get to $1 million, I need to save $1,000 a month. And I don't know if that number is correct or not. I'm just pulling it out of thin air. I need to save $1,500 a month. It's a lot of money, but that is what it's going to take for me to accumulate over the next 25 years at an 8% rate of return, $1 million. Okay. Now, how do you do that math? Well, there's amazing free calculators all over the place on the internet. So you can just throw into your favorite Google machine, financial calculator free, and it'll show you. Or if you are working at a company that offers you a 401k, you could simply go to the company's website. Let's say it's Fidelity. You go to your portal or go to your account on Fidelity. It'll tell you, based on your age, how much you need to be saving right now in order to accumulate the amount that you want in the future. So that number right there, $1,000 a month, I need to be putting in my 401k. That's the number one priority that you have, number one on your reverse budget. And then what's left over is fair game. Okay. Then you can fill in your fixed expenses. You can fill in your discretionary spending. A couple of words on fixed expenses, what I wanted to talk about, because there are a couple of different ways that we blow up our budgets most commonly. So when I say blow up, I just mean that these items are going to take away from your most important objectives, for your biggest priorities. The first is food away from home. And I'm not a monk. I'm not taking a vow of poverty. I like going out to eat. But we Americans spend way too much money eating out, happy hour, whatever it might be. And if that's your thing, that's fine. But we need to make sure that we're not getting the plot twisted. We're not screwing up the order. We need to keep the main thing. The main thing, that's the main thing. And we just talked about how it's funding your retirement and saving for your retirement. So if you going out to eat or whatever, eating food, consuming food products outside of your house, if that's preventing you and keeping you from your number one priority, your biggest objective, well, then that's a problem. That's a problem. The next way is spending too much money on your vehicle. So many great cars out there. And geez, it seems like cars are way more expensive than they used to be. Maybe that's a dumb thing to say, but I feel like they've exponentially gone up in cost. And part of the world that I live in, I see a lot of great, nice cars out there. And it just always makes me wonder, like, at what cost? At what cost am I driving this fancy car around? And oftentimes it is at the cost of not being able to fund your most important objectives and priorities. But only you're the person. You're the only one that can do that. You need to balance out. Is this car worth the... is it worth the trade-off of not being able to put resources towards my other priorities? And it might be. If you say, yeah, this is my car is my favorite thing in the whole world. Nothing makes me happier. I think about it all day long. Great. Okay. Fair enough. Then the third area is your house, your apartment, wherever you live in, your condo. We overspend on this like crazy. And this one for sure is way more expensive than it was. So I get it. I get it. And is it fair? No. Is it unfair? I don't know. It just is. And we need to play the hands that were dealt. We need to play the game as it lies. I think you understand what I'm trying to say. I can't necessarily bring down the cost of housing. I can't change the price of education today. I can just operate within the confines of the system and try to make good decisions based on my family's priorities and needs and all that good stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of the bottom line there. So food away from home, our cars, our houses, those are the biggest fixed expenses that if we're making bad decisions there, it just really handcuffs us to be able to make good decisions elsewhere. Because those three areas, food, car, house, for a lot of people, it's gobbling up a huge part of their budget. And so there's just not enough money left over for our other priorities. And then it's the discretionary spending beyond what I've just talked about. That's what's left over. These are our wants a lot of the time. And now there's a lot of things that I want. Got hobbies. I like going to concerts. I like all these things also. So it's why it's so important to be figuring out, taking that big step back and saying, these are my top priorities. Think about why you put yourself in the position of how it's going to feel when you're actually there. I think that'll help. I like to talk a lot about just right. So too hot, too cold, just right. And then the next step in that is what's the best case scenario of what I'm doing right now? So for you, if you were to take your life out to its logical conclusion 30 years from now, what's your life going to look like? If everything goes great based on what you're doing now, how will your finances look in 30 years? What's the worst case? Things don't go as planned. In fact, they go as wrong as possible. What's your financial situation and your life going to look like in 30 years? And who is that going to impact beyond you? And how's that going to feel? Just right, we're talking optimal. What's the most logical conclusion? Just take your life, your current behaviors, everything you're doing out 30 years. Most logically, just right, how's that going to feel? So that's what I want you to be thinking about. Take yourself to those places, and then you can make better decisions. Maybe that helps me to make better decisions, helps me to make tougher decisions about things. To say, okay, I'm going to go without this thing, even though I want it, because I want this thing the most. It is my top priority, the most important thing to me. And then finally, your net worth. And net worth is it's your assets versus minus your liabilities, and that is what your net worth is. So you may not have a net worth at all. Could be zero, could actually be negative. If you're graduating college right now with a lot of student loan debt, then you probably have a negative net worth. But it's a number that we must pay attention to, because what gets measured gets managed. So got to know the old score on the scoreboard kind of a thing. And understanding where it is that you're at. And this, I think, begins tracking on a monthly level and just looking at your cash flow. As if you're not where you want to be, or if you're not trending in the right direction, well, then changes need to happen. And cash flow is simply knowing exactly how much money you have coming in, and then knowing exactly how much money you have coming out. And then your net worth is you have to know the amount of debt that you have. And then the value of your assets. So that's where the budget comes in. It's tracking money in, money out. We create a budget, which is making a plan for our money. And then we're monitoring our net worth, and we're doing that by looking at our monthly transactions and then making sure that we're staying on top of the value of all of our accounts and the amount of debt that we're having and managing it and servicing it and all that great stuff. Okay. So wherever you are at right now, I think that financial success is certainly available to you. I even think that you're worthy of it. I think that you're even deserving of financial success, but none of us are entitled to it. So we have to get out, set the intention, and do the work and make it happen. Fundamentally, never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are, brothers and sisters. So we have to act accordingly.